Hello and welcome to the Keeper Cup podcast. Chad Young here with Pete Ball, back at it after a week off. We had some travel, some family stuff going on. I just got back from a week in Hong Kong, so I'm a little jet lagged. I'm kind of a mess here, Pete, but I also have literally no clue what's going on in the world of baseball. I followed my Guardians while I was there. Not a big baseball town, Hong Kong. But they did have, actually, this will be a fun little conversation. There's an MLB store that was right near where my hotel was. It is interesting. I don't even know how to describe it. It's like a MLB fashion store. Like, they have like hats and shirts and purses and shoes, but it was all like trendy stuff. There were really four teams represented there. There was one team that had one item, but I think it was a mistake, which I'll explain when at the end of this conversation. But two of the teams, Yankees and Dodgers. Very obvious, right? Great. Who are the other two teams heavily represented in that store, if you had to guess?
Okay.
One of them, I think, is kind of not a surprise. One of them I found very surprising.
And the two you said were Yankees and Dodgers, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Because you would have guessed them first. The Red Sox were third. And the team that I said was kind of like had one item is there was one like socks, you know, the socks down at an angle, White Sox hat. There was one of those in like this green color or something. And I'm fairly certain it was only there because somebody in China thought it was a Red Sox hat.
That's the only thing they ordered. The
only White Sox item there. Fourth team represented there. Who was it?
Man, I'm gonna go with the Angels.
It was not the Angels. It's a good guess, right? You like Ohtani was there. Maybe they built up some fan base. Not the Angels. The only explanation for this is that the Red Sox are there along with this team because Hong Kong has a huge Keeper Cut listenership because it was the Guardians, other team heavily represented in that store. I was talking to someone from the Otter News Slack who was recently in Taiwan and said he saw the same thing there. And in Taiwan, and this might be related, there have been a number of Taiwanese players for the Guardians, including Yu Chang. He's probably the most famous, but they had a couple pitchers for a while. And so it may just be that, you know, there haven't been a lot of players from that part of the world, right? You had Japan and Korea. There's been some players around, but when you get anywhere further south in Asia, not so much. And so it may just be that representation. But yeah, we first saw the store, it was closed, and my wife was like, do you want to come back later and check it out? And I was like, I don't need to see more Yankees and Dodgers stuff. And then we happened to be by there, and I walked in and I was like, what is going on? Why is there so much Guardian stuff here?
They knew you were there.
That's the only explanation I can come up with. So I don't know. Anyways, that's my fun little, that was my baseball experience in Hong Kong. But we are back. This is episode 164, which takes us to jersey number 64, Pete. And yeah, we've talked about this. The jersey numbers, they get
ugly,
more challenging. Dustin Pedroia wore 64 when he first came up. Obviously not the number he's known for, but he did wear it for part of a season.
Well, Pedroia won Rookie of the Year, so, you know, I guess this has to be the Pedroia episode. I mean, there's Dean Kramer. He's been wearing it for 6 years. That's kind of like the longest tenured. Derek Law, not a lot of fantasy relevancy. Pedro Strop, not too much.
Yeah. I think he might with Pedroia. He did not wear it for his rookie of the year.
Rookie of the year, yeah. Well, I chose my words very carefully there. Yeah. He won rookie of the year. He didn't wear it wearing that jersey, but he was around that time.
He came up anybody like
right now is wearing it.
He came up in 2006 wearing that number, wearing 64. 31 games, 98 plate appearances, and he sucked. Part of that was a 188 BABIP.
A Bregman Trout start.
Yeah, it wasn't great. And then, you know, as you said, was excellent in 2007, but he wasn't wearing the number then. But yeah, I'm
Oh, here we go.
I'm fine with that, for lack of a better option. Oh, did you come up with someone better?
Yeah. Shane Smith is off to a good start to his career. He was a late-round sleeper target of folks, and he's already up to 0.6 war on the young season, and he is wearing number 64. So my nomination would be Shane Smith, just to keep it relevant.
Yeah, I think that's fine. It's interesting. I haven't, like I said, I've been very disconnected, and so I'm pulling up Shane Smith's stats on the season, and 2.82 ERA and 22 and a third innings. He also has only 15 strikeouts versus 8 walks, which is not ideal. 194 BABIP might have something to do with his success. A 3.8% home run per fly ball rate might have something to do with his success. So yeah, Shane Smith, you're getting this episode, but you also might be a little bit of a sell high. So
it's like a backhanded, here you go, here's your episode, buddy.
Yeah, no better options though. So and we also now can get into our head-to-head heroes, which is something we haven't done yet this year, but we've got a couple of weeks of baseball under our belt, and so we can start to do that. And there is a guy, Pete, I know you're still looking yours up, so I'm gonna go first on this one, and he's a little bit of an obvious one, in that no one, you know, when I say this guy's name, no one's gonna be like, yeah, that guy really, you know, carried my team this week, and I didn't expect it. You expect it from this guy. That's Bryce Harper. 3 home runs. He had a 292 average, 452 on base, 708 slugging over the last 7 days. The reason I'm calling him out, though, is he also stole 2 bases. And 2 bases in a week, I mean, first of all, that's a lot, right? That's like a 45 stolen base, 50 stolen base pace. It's only a week. 2 stolen bases isn't that crazy. But Harper has 5 stolen bases without being caught so far this year. I went back through his game logs, and it's been since at least 2001 that he, within a season, stole 5 bases without being caught, like in any stretch, right? He obviously, like last year, 7 stolen bases, 4 caught stealing, 11 and 3 the year before that, 11 and 4 before that. 2021, he stole 13 and was caught 3 times. 2020, he stole 8 and was caught twice. That was in the shortened season. And then 15 and 13 in 2018, 2019, each caught 3 times each year. He is theoretically on for like a 30 stolen base pace right now. I don't think he's going to steal 30. That is not what I'm out here saying. He did steal 21 once back in 2016. But the fact that Harper is trying so much more, right? His attempt rate is way up. And the fact that he's been successful suggests a couple things to me. One, in your 5x5 leagues, in your stolen base leagues, like, he may get to 12, 13, 14, 15 stolen bases. After he only had 7 last year and 11 the 2 years before that, I think there's a good chance he's on, you know, at least gets up to that 13 he had in 2021. But more importantly, for a guy who's, you know, had some injury issues over the last few years, right? I mean, he missed a lot of time in 2022. He missed some time in 2023. He only played 145 last year. He is 32 years old, turned 33 during the playoffs this year. The stolen base rate suggests he's healthy, that he's feeling good, right? He's that's stolen bases for especially for a guy like Harper, they're an easy thing to just not do, right? If you're feeling banged up, you're not feeling at your peak, you feel like you need to like focus on your energies on the stuff that matters. His stolen bases don't matter. The Phillies aren't counting on his stolen bases. And so the fact that he's running so much and running so effectively, to me, is some evidence to suggest he's in peak condition right now. He's feeling it. And so, yeah, he's getting my head-to-head hero. And a little nod that, you know, maybe we're seeing, like, the stats are great, right? I mean, he's obviously, he's always a good hitter, but he's back up over a 400 OBP this year. His batting average is down a little bit, but his BABIP is way down, and there's no reason to think that'll continue. That's driven, it looks like, by a low line drive rate, from what I can tell. But that's, like, line drive rate is, you know, notoriously fickle. It does not stabilize quickly. He has always been a sort of 22, 23% line drive rate guy. I think it'll go right back up to that from the 13.6 it's at right now, which will bring the BABIP up, which will bring everything else up, which will get him on base more and maybe let him steal more. Who knows? So yeah, I'm not looking at that stolen bases and telling you he's going to steal 20 or 30 bases this year. Like, that's not what I'm looking at, but I do think you're going to get 10 to 15 from him. And I think it's some evidence that he's just, things are clicking for him right now in a good way.
Yeah, I like that pick. You know, as folks know, we usually don't pick players as good as Bryce Harper, but when there's an outlier stat like 5 stolen bases so far this season, I think they're absolutely worth bringing up. Bryce Harper, you know, this isn't saying much because it is first base, but he does lead the position in stolen bases so far. And if your first baseman was Spencer Steer or your first baseman was Cody Bellinger, like, you're expecting stolen bases out of those guys, yeah. And they don't even combine for half as many as Bryce Harper has so far. Obviously, you know, tiny sample, but I agree. It shows that Bryce is healthy, a player who you took in the second round. You need him on the field. And, you know, for what it's worth, this isn't going to continue either, but his walk rate is 19.1%. So even if, you know, stolen bases come in batches and he might go all of May and not steal a single base, the fact that he's kind of locked in and getting on base, the opportunities are going to be there. So I would agree with Chad. I think 10 to 15 is going to happen this season. He only needs 5 more rest of the year. He's going to get double digit stolen bases this year.
Yeah. Who'd you come up with, Pete?
So I really wanted to go with Trevor Story, but I want to leave my Red Sox bias at the door. It's so nice to see him hitting, so I'm just going to give him a tiny shout out there. But I'm going to go with Pete Crow Armstrong. I was wrong on Pete Crow Armstrong so far this season. He was not a player I was in on. His NFBC ADP was 133. It just felt like that was just like so early. And like, if I could get Cedric Mullins later or somebody like that, like, I'm basically getting the same. And look, Cedric Mullins has been better, so maybe I haven't been that wrong. But Pete Crow Armstrong has had an excellent week. Remember, this is head-to-head Euro, so we're looking at the last 7 days. And he's actually hit for power. He's hit 3 home runs over the last week. This is a player who's like, the opportunity is going to be there all season because he's like a platinum glover. He's the best center fielder in baseball. He's an incredible athlete. He's very quick. So with those opportunities will come stolen bases. But the question is, are you going to get anything anywhere else? And so far this season, he has been excellent. And maybe more importantly for Pete Crow Armstrong's case, the Cubs have been an amazing offensive team. So he's looking like in the early going, he's going to get so much volume that he should probably be able to steal 40 bases this year. And if he does give you the occasional power like he's done over the last 7 days, we could be looking at like a 12 homer, 40 stolen base guy who at that point, it actually looks like his ADP was kind of a bargain as opposed to a bust. So Pete Crow Armstrong, a player I'm keeping an eye on, still just 23 years old. I don't think he's going to move up that lineup. That lineup, like I said, everybody seems to be hitting, but they should volume their way to some pretty decent totals. And so I'm really encouraged by what I saw over the last week.
Yeah. And I think, you know, with Armstrong, his Statcast data is, his ex-WOBA is 306 versus a 350 WOBA on the season, right? That's not a super great sign, but we've talked before that, you know, ex-WOBA is not predictive. It's descriptive of what's already happened. His EV at 89.3 is up from 88.9 last year. His max EV of 108.6 is a new career high. The barrel rate and the hard hit 35.8%. It was 36.8 last year. Barrel rate 7.5% was 7.4% last year. So you look at that and those numbers are not terrible, right? And the reality is there was some thought that those numbers for him might be terrible, right? He might hit for like, you know, a 1% barrel rate or something like that. He's not doing that. On the other hand, they're not really better than they were last year. And last year he was not good, right? I mean, a 289 WOBA, he had a sub 300 OBP. I'm a little bit sort of unsure what to make of him going forward because there's nothing, like, I don't look at his line this year and think like, man, he's been, you know, doing X so much obviously better than he was last year, right? There's nothing that stands out as like, oh, this is the improvement he's made, right? His strikeout rate is up, you know, 0.6%, nothing to worry about. His walk rate is down. Or sorry, his walk rate is up 1%, but in, you know, 98 plate appearances, that's a walk, right? So it's not a, we have talked about the fact that strikeout rate and walk rate are among the first things to stabilize. They actually are numbers worth looking at right now. So I'm not saying that that increase is, you know, noise. I'm saying it's such a small increase that it doesn't really move the needle for me. His fly ball rate is up, and maybe that's going to help him. It'll certainly, like, if he, it'll help him from a home run standpoint. It should hurt him from a BABIP standpoint, and his BABIP is up as well. We'll see if that continues. But he's not really, from what I can tell, hitting the ball meaningfully better than he did last year, right? Like I said, 306 xWOBA this year, 281 last year. The hard hit rate down a little bit. The barrel rate basically the same. Launch angle's up, which matches any increase in fly balls. He is getting an increase in his bat speed data. His average bat speed is up from 70.6 to 71.8. That's the difference between not very good and good, right? I know people are still sort of like learning what that data means, but his, you know, last year that was a 26th percentile bat speed. This year it's a 49th percentile bat speed. That's a meaningful change from being, you know, barely out of the bottom quartile to being, you know, middle of the pack. And his fast swing rate last year was just 8%. So it swings over 75 miles per hour. This year it's 21.9%. And so he's really getting into his fastest swings more often. And maybe that's going to be enough. Maybe that's going to be the thing. Maybe that is the item that stands out that tells you he's turned a corner. But I'm still, I don't know. I'm still not looking to buy Beecro Armstrong, I don't think. I just don't see enough that stands out here to tell me he's meaningfully different than he was last year. Maybe that's a mistake, but that's sort of where I am.
Yeah. Based on the numbers, it doesn't look like so far he is that different. Banking on, again, 23 years old. He's not a prospect that came out of nowhere. And one thing I am kind of keeping an eye on is that pulled fly ball rate. Now, he's not like an Isak Paredes or something like that. Like, Isak Paredes, actually, to bring him up, is having his highest pulled in the air rate so far in his career, which is very exciting in Houston. But that's gone up through his extremely limited experience so far each season for PCA. So if he does keep that up, and we can get to those 12 homers again, there's good baseball. There's good hitters in baseball, and then there's useful fantasy players. And so I think you can totally feel like PCA is not a good baseball hitter. I think you'd be hard pressed to find somebody who would say that he is. But the question is, can he get to 10 to 12 homers with 40 stolen bases? He's probably pacing for that already. And I don't think he's doing anything that crazy that suggests like a ton of regression is coming. So I, you know, if I see somebody who's like looking at the numbers saying, ah, this isn't really legit, I don't think he's that good of a hitter, and I think he can go 1240 to keep bringing up that random benchmark, then I think I would trade for him.
Yeah, I mean, he's at 98 plate appearances. If you figure he can get close to 600 on the season because he's going to play every day, that puts him at a 42 stolen base, 18 home run. Sorry, yeah, 42 stolen base, 18 home run pace with 60-ish RBIs and over 100 runs scored.
Yeah, and I don't think he's going to reach any of those but the stolen bases, but it is worth at least pointing out. Yeah,
I think that's right. So yeah, we've both been, like I said, I've been out of the country. Pete's had some stuff going on, so we've both been a little disconnected. So Pete, you're going to pull together some news and notes, some stuff to talk about, get ourselves caught up as well as our listeners. What happened while I was out of the country?
Yeah, this is going to be a little touch and go. Spencer Strider made his debut. I think off the top of my head, that's like the most significant thing. So Spencer Strider made his debut against the Blue Jays. He went 5 innings, 5 hits, 2 earned, 1 walk, 5 strikeouts. He did give up a homer. That was to Vladdy Jr. Before he got pulled in the 6th inning, I believe. He got up to 97 pitches. I think, you know, we maybe put the cart a little bit before the horse because Strider was putting some absolutely absurd numbers up in his minor league rehab stint. And it was like, oh man, he's just going to light the league on fire. Here we go. Spencer Strider's back. But there were, some things that weren't super great in his debut. First of all, he was hit really hard, averaged 93.8 miles per hour against. So that wasn't great. And then you look at the velocity on the four-seamer, still down about a mile an hour compared to where it was in 2024 and compared to where it was in 2023. He's down almost 2 full miles an hour. So it's going to take him time to, kind of work back up, obviously. I think that's where I'm looking first with Spencer Strider is like, all right, I probably have him right now as like a top 15 starter, right? I think that's probably fair. If he wants to re-enter that top five conversation, I think he's got to get the velocity back. So the velocity is going to be something I'm watching for Spencer Strider. It wasn't the easiest team to come back against. Toronto's okay, but they're also not great. So next time out, Strider has, I just had it up. I want to see. Is it the Twins? I think it might be the Twins. Either way, I'm going to be watching his velocity, not so much the quality of the opponent, because at least if he's back, you have a top 15 starter, and I firmly believe that to be true. This is a guy who's had a Tommy John surgery and a half, though. He had Tommy John in 2019. He just went through the brace procedure, so I wouldn't be surprised if he does not quite reach that level, that like literal historic level in terms of strikeouts anyway that he was pitching at before his most recent injury.
Yeah, I mean, having said that, especially in keeper formats, like if there's an opportunity to buy on Strider, like if he has another sort of weak-ish start next time out and somebody's getting a little cold feet, yeah, I would 100% buy in, right? Let someone know, like, hey, look, last 2 years he's got a 5.79 ERA. Like, it's only 14 innings, whatever, but like he's been struggling, right? Maybe he's not, maybe he's still hurt, maybe something's wrong, the velo's down. Like if somebody's feeling that anxiety and you have a window to buy, I would take it. My guess is you don't, right? My guess is anybody who's sitting on him is sitting on him because they believe. But I like, this start was a weird start where, like you said, the overall line wasn't bad, 3.60 ERA. If you go look at the FIP and XFIP, they're not great, 4.82, 4.55, but like a strikeout per inning, he only had the one walk. He gave up a home run. It's not a thing that I'm super concerned about. I like what I see in general. I do think the one thing that I'd be watching in addition to the velo is he has a career 36.3% ground ball rate. His two sort of great seasons, 2022, 2023, those were 40.3 and 34.1. It was 21.4 in his lone start this year. It's one start. Like looking at someone's ground ball rate across one start is not a stat I want to be focused on. But it is something I would watch moving forward is does he get back up in that 35 to 40% range or not? Because he has been... like even in 2023, right, his 186 inning season, he had a 12.2% home run per fly ball rate, which led to a 1.06 home run per nine. If he's keeping the ball on the ground, he keeps those home runs. Like the home run per fly ball rate won't really matter, but he's not a guy who really suppresses home runs by suppressing hard contact. He suppresses home runs by keeping the ball out of the air. And that will matter in terms of his production. So those are the two things that you're right. The velo's got to come back and the ground ball's got to come back. Those are things I'd be watching.
Yeah, but I would agree if he does have kind of a bad outing, I'm targeting him because again, if the velocity never comes back, he's probably still a top 15 pitcher. And when I say never comes back, I mean, he was hitting 95. It's not like it's 89 miles an hour or something like that. But when you're as good as Spencer Strider was, the margin for error is very thin. So what else we got going on in the news? Well, I'm going to bring it to the Red Sox just for a second because I have a player who's been a major disappointment. And I think his view in fantasy is really going to be impacted. Like going forward is really going to be impacted by the next couple of months here. And that's Tristan Casas because Tristan, I've always kind of been in the middle on Tristan Cassis, in the camp of thinking like, all right, first base is deep. You know, Cassis is probably going to be a low average, but 30 homers, like that's probably what he's going to like average out to be. We'll see what happens. Injuries have really hurt his career in the early going, especially last season, which was supposed to be his breakout year because he had that ridiculous second half to 2023 where it looked like it was happening. And then this year has been absolutely nothing short of a disaster. And yet it looks like he's been showing serious signs lately. He had a walk-off single yesterday that, I don't know, probably could have been a home run in other parks. I have no idea. It was a smoke off the Green Monster. And all he had to do was get to first base. So it goes in the books as a single. Could it have been more? Maybe. But look at his exit velocity since April 14th. So there are strikeouts mixed in here, so it's going to sound like there's not that many plate appearances. But starting with the earliest plate appearance, 83.7 miles an hour, okay. Then 99.8, 108, 76.1, not great. Then 110, 97, 99, 102, 98. And then we had an 84, and then that walk-off single the other day was 99 miles an hour. Like, this is a guy who's still hitting the snot out of the ball. It just seems to be, well, lately at the beginning of the year, that wasn't the case. Just seems to be going right to some fielders. You look at his BABIP, it's down at 229. Now, some of that is earned. He is not much of an athlete. He's one of the slowest players in baseball. But still, you look at the last two seasons, 311 BABIP, 317 BABIP. He should be somebody who's a lot better, obviously, than 229. So I think this is a player who's kind of like at a crossroads. I think a lot of managers are at a crossroads. If you've continued to trot him out there, like, he's killing you. He really is killing you. And yet, if he's on your roster, it's because you saw what a lot of people see, that there's a lot of upside in this bat. Granted, it is a lefty in Fenway, which isn't always the best for power, but it really shouldn't surprise anybody if Cassis over the next 2 months puts up like 15 homers, and you know, it's probably still going to come with a shaky average. But given the price you paid for him, because he's getting cut in a lot of ESPN leagues, I'm not ready to cut him yet, but it's such a hairy situation, especially for our listeners who play in keeper leagues. Like, this is a young guy. To really figure out what are we going to do with Tristan Cassis. He's borderline unplayable at the moment, but I still think he's showing enough where it's like, I can't really drop him yet.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, his strikeout rate is down from where it was last year and closer to where it was in his 2023 season, which was his best season to date. The walk rate is down, and it's interesting. I mean, part of that is first strikes and zone percentage are up, so pitchers are challenging him more. Saris has talked in Rates and Barrels about that being a leading indicator of a player struggling, but he talks about it with older players. He's like, if you know you think a player might be in decline, go look at how often pitchers are challenging him. Like, that's a good, like, they notice it before we do. It's a good signal. It's something like something's off, and they feel like they can just straight up beat this guy. First strike percentage I looked at years ago and found that it was pretty not sticky. And so the zone percentage barely up, first strike percentage up 6%, but I don't think that's, I don't know. Pitchers are challenging him right now, but I don't think that's a huge issue. He's not chasing more. He's swinging more in the zone, but he's also making more contact in the zone. So part of the reason that walk rate might be down is he's just putting the ball in play more often. But the swing strike rate is up because he is whiffing outside the zone a ton. His O contact, which for his career was 59.9%, is down to 43.8%. And so that's really sort of the issue he's having, is he's swinging through a ton of pitches when he chases. It's hard to know exactly, like, you don't want to make contact on pitches you're chasing, right? Those aren't helping you. You're not going to get good contact from those. But it might be inflating his strikeout rate a bit because he's not falling off some of those pitches. His strikeout rate isn't bad. I'm sort of with you where, like, I see some good signs here. The fly ball rate is back up to where it was, which I think is a good thing. He's hitting a lot of line drives, which should be a good thing. The X WOBA isn't good, but it is more than 60 points higher than the WOBA. The hard hit rate is down, but fine. The barrel rate is down, but still double digits. I think he's a good buy low if you can get in there.
Yeah, I think I'm in the same camp as just as somebody who's rostered him. It's just so frustrating so far. Like you just had to put him on the bench and you don't even end up regretting it. And for what it's worth, for the managers that do have Cassis, in case you don't keep up with this kind of thing, I know I have a hard time doing it with all of my players. He has moved down the lineup. For most of the season, he was batting cleanup. Now he's in that bottom third. It hasn't helped yet. I mean, we'll see if this walk-off single really gets him going. It's helped in the exit velocity department, that's for sure, but it definitely hasn't yielded any kind of results.
Let's take a quick break. When we come back, we'll talk about some of those promotions. We're also in the back half of this episode. We're going to talk a little bit about some ex-WOBA versus WOBA overperformers, but first, let's take our first break. All right, welcome back to the Keeper Cup podcast. Chad Young and Pete Ball here. We've been going through some news and notes, Pete getting me caught up on what's been going on in the world of baseball while I was out of the country. Pete, you said a couple promotions that are worth discussing. Who's up?
Yeah, I think so. Luke Kieschel, I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly. He's up with the Twins, kind of a consensus top 50 guy. And I think most exciting about him is, first of all, he's kind of hit the ground running. He's off to a decent start. I know he had a double the other day in an RBI. And he hasn't embarrassed himself at the major league level yet, even though he has not taken a walk. What's most intriguing to me about this promotion is that he batted second for Minnesota yesterday. So in terms of lineup placement, sometimes you get these prospects called up and they're like guys you're kind of excited about, and they're not really batting in an advantageous spot in the lineup, so the volume just isn't there. If Kieschel sticks and he sticks batting second, we could be in for a pretty exciting rookie season from the youngster on the Twins.
Yeah, and you know, given all the injury issues and underperformance issues and stuff the Twins have had, there's an opportunity for him to grab a role and run with it. Kieschel he's an interesting player. I mean, he is he hit 15 home runs across two levels last year in what is it, exactly 600 plate appearances. I'm adding up the wrong numbers. In 379 plate appearances. There is some power there. That is the first time he has gone into double digits for home run. So it's not this isn't a guy that you're like, you know, looking at 30 plus or something like that. But like, yeah, he could put up a 20 home run pace in the majors. That is certainly within the range of outcomes. If you look at his grades on Fangraphs, raw power is a current 40, potential 50. Game power is a 35, potential 50. So like, you know, the power is a work in progress, but it could be there. He's a good source of stolen bases, stole 23 last year, stole 11 the year before that. And that was, you know, I mentioned, by the way, it was the only year he got into double digit home runs. He's only like, he played 23 games in 2023. 31 games. God, I'm really struggling to read box score or read stats pages today. 31 games in 2023 before playing 102 last year. So like, it's not crazy that he's never hit double digits except for that one year, right? He has barely played. But he is a good source of steals for sure, which also gives you a little bit of floor, especially in your 5x5 leagues. Like, he's going to steal some bases. So if nothing else, he's going to get you that. The thing that's sort of intriguing or exciting about Kieschel is, you know, he has consistently been under a 20% strikeout rate and in double digits for walk rate. Now, it is much, much harder to do that in the majors than it is in the minors. And he's barely really sniffed the high minors, right? He has a total of 72 games across AA and AAA the last 2 years. So, you know, we'll see how that adjustment goes for him. But I think he's going to walk, which means he's going to be on base. You mentioned he hasn't taken a walk yet. I talked a little bit about, you know, with Cass's zone rate, first strike rate. The zone percentage for Kieschel through his first, you know, two games, is 57.1% with an 88.9% first strike rate. Like, this is just a rookie that pitchers are like, okay, let's see what you got. I'm going to throw you pitches in the zone. Let's see if you can do some damage. Now that he's done some, right, he hasn't hit a home run, but like you said, in nine plate appearances, he's got three hits, he's got a single and two doubles, he's stolen a base. At some point, pitchers are going to be like, okay, you can hit the ball. That's good to know. Now let's see if you can hit it when I'm trying to make you miss, right? And so that'll be the next step, is does he actually show, you know, that ability to take a walk that he consistently demonstrated in the minors. And if he does, this gets real interesting real fast. And I like Keyshaw. I honestly missed that he was called up, so I'm excited that he's there.
See, that's why we're doing this. And we'll do the last piece of news so we can get to the WOBA differences. It's another promotion, Chad. This is a guy we've talked about kind of briefly in the past, and that's Chandler Simpson. Debuted yesterday, kind of excitingly leading off for the Tampa Bay Rays. Went 1-for-5 with a double, a run, and an RBI. He was part of that rally against Devin Williams in the ninth inning, which, Chad, if you haven't seen and you have Devin Williams, or let me actually take a second. If you have Porter Hodge or you have Jordan Romano, don't check your teams this week.
No, I have Romano.
The Otnew Fangraphs list, or I'm sorry, the Otnew Keeper Cut Listener League, I'm out for the season. That's like 13 earned runs in like an inning and a third for me. So my team is completely cooked. Everyone's on the block. I don't have the patience. Sorry. Anyway, to bring it back to Chandler Simpson, this is a guy who could steal a mountain of bags. We talked about that. He had 104 stolen bases over just 110 games in 2024 in the minor leagues. He had 8 stolen bases through just 17 games this season. He didn't steal a base yesterday, but again, he only got on when he doubled off Devin Williams in the ninth. I think, Chad, like, simply in Roto, I might have more interest in Chandler Simpson if I need stolen bases. In other formats and points leagues, I think I'd rather have I'd have interest in Keyshaw. If honestly, I don't just prefer Keyshaw in every format, I don't know. But Simpson is a guy who's interesting for that kind of like assassin role of getting stolen bases. I think if you missed out on Victor Scott, you probably hated yourself for like the first week of the season. Then you remembered it's a long season and he's pretty much a stolen base guy. I think you can just go at Chandler Simpson and you might have the same version or better for the Tampa Bay Rays. And I don't mean to like paint all these stolen base guys with a broad brush, but I just think power wins, man. Power wins in fantasy. And if you're going to give up a roster spot to a guy who's going to give you like 30 RBI and 5 homers, I just can't do it.
Yeah, I am in the middle of trying to watch that Simpson double. He fought off a pitch the other way. It was a ground rule double. It would have been a double anyways. Like, it was a legit double, I think. But if you go look at, I mean, he literally just fought off a pitch. It was an 84.9 mile per hour exit velocity. 26 degree launch angle, 295 was the hit distance. It's a 130 X batting average, right? So like, he did not like rope a double off of Devin Williams. He hit a looping fly ball that happened to be right down the line the other way, where like no one's playing you that way. You know, no one's covering the lines the other way like that. Like, if that ball is to almost any other part of the outfield, it's just a lazy fly ball to the outfield and it's caught. So I think the thing I was concerned about when we talked about Simpson last time was just like, is he ever going to actually hit the ball hard at all? And, you know, his exit velocities on the game, it's one game, 90.4, 75.4, 82.8, 84.9. That 90.4 are not bad, but it was a negative 4-degree launch angle. So he hit a semi hard hit ground ball. Doesn't even qualify as a hard hit, but like an above 90 ground ball. The only ball that he hit that had a X batting average over 200 was a line out in his previous at bat before the double. That was a 790 XBA, but that was, you know, an 82.8 mile per hour. This is one of those where, like, when we talk about like X WOBA, X batting average not being predictive, they're descriptive. Well, a 790 XBA on an 82.8 mile per hour looping liner, like, that is not evidence that a guy is crushing the ball. It's just like he hit a soft line drive. Soft line drives fall in a lot. That one didn't. So the double's great. And it's a little unfortunate it bounced out of play, because if it doesn't bounce out of play, like, who knows? Like, dude can fly. I think in 5x5, he is interesting because of, like you said, like, hey, at least he's going to steal you a bunch of bases. If he's going to lead off for them, great. I just don't see a major league bat at all.
Yeah, I think we're in lockstep on that one, Chad. And I don't want to take time from the Woba conversation, but this was significant news that took place while you were out. Justin Steele is out for the season with elbow surgery. That's a huge hit to managers. But not much more to say. You'll see him in a year and a half.
I caught that one because I was setting lineups, and I've got him on a couple teams. And my son was setting his lineups, and he's got Steele, and he was big.
So that's devastating.
You know, you got to learn.
He has Aaron Judge, though. So, like,
he does have Aaron Judge. He's been off to a good start. He's
all that matters.
My son, I mean, Judge too, but my son has been off to a good start. He's enjoying it. So, so let's shift our attention to some ex-WOBA, I guess, underperformers, right? That's what you call it. Like, their ex-WOBAs are better than their WOBAs. So, guys whose lines have not been particularly good, but their underlying data suggests they should have been better. Now, a couple of caveats on this. One, we're still pretty early. I have no idea, to be honest, if we're at a point where ex-WOBA is like a good or bad thing to be looking at. My guess is it's probably too early to look at it, but I'm going to do it anyway. I also will remind you, as we were just talking about, like, it's descriptive, not predictive. So we're looking at these guys. It's not as simple as like ex-WOBA high, WOBA low, therefore he's a buy low. It is worth digging in a little deeper on some of these players to see what might be going on. And I think the other thing worth noting here is, like, from a keeper league perspective, there's some names on here, at least one name on here that is really interesting to me from a keeper league perspective, even if in redraft, I might be like, still not really sure. But I'm just going to go down this list from top to bottom, and we'll see how many names we get through. The top name on here, who is not a guy I'm interested in, I don't really think he's a super interesting buy low, in part because I'm not sure he can buy low. That's Salvador Perez. Salvi has a 399 ex-WOBA, but just a 251 WOBA. That is a huge gap. I mean, that is a 148 point gap. No one else is over 115. So it's a huge gap in his WOBA and ex-WOBA. I don't know. I've always been a little lower than others on Salvador Perez, in part because for most of his career, he didn't really get on base. He wasn't actually a particularly good hitter. Then all of a sudden he got old, and he's been a great hitter since turning since turning 30, right?
Like, it really
catchers is weird. Usually like, oh, they turn 30 and they're like, they turn into pumpkins. They can't hit anymore. And Perez, I mean, this is the thing, is like, as good as everybody wanted to talk about Perez being, up through his age 30 season, he had a career 316 WOBA. Like, that's fine, but it's not like world beating. Since turning 30, since his age 30 season, it's 334, and that's dragged down by a 251 this year so far. So, like, yeah. Anyways, I don't think you can realistically buy low on him. I think looking at his numbers, the walk rate is exactly where it was last year. The strikeout rate is up, but it's not up from anything it's been in the past, really. His contact rates look good. His chase rate is, he's always been a free swinger, and that's still the case, but it's nothing real concerning there. His exit velocity looks fine. His max EV is down. Hard hit rate is fine. Barrel rate is up. Like, I think that, my take on this is, I think Salvador Perez is exactly who we thought he was before the season. I still think, as a catcher who turns 35 in 2 weeks, you've got to be cautious and concerned about what the future looks like. But I think he's just, like I said, I think he's just sort of who he is.
Yeah, I agree with that. Like, that summary of the assessment is that he basically is who he is. I was hoping, all right, he is turning 35 soon, whatever. Maybe he's getting less looks at catcher. He's going to be more of a DH. That's why we liked Wilson Contreras going so much into the season, because he's going to get less looks at catcher, which he has, and has just moved to first base. It hasn't really worked for him so far as we had hoped, but that was kind of my thinking here at Sal. Like, let's get him a lot more time at DH. He's still catching a ton. And that part does make me a little weary, but if I have him, I'm not looking to like move him, because I'm pretty sure he's, like you just said, he's exactly who we thought he was when we drafted him. So if you drafted him, you were probably expecting, I don't know, 28 to 32 homers and decent RBI and not much else. And I think that's probably what you're going to get.
Next guy on this list, one of, let's see, it looks like four players with a 100-plus point gap between WOBA and XWOBA. Dylan Cruz, 225, WOBA, 340, XWOBA. Cruz is the name on this list that, from a keeper league perspective, I am most interested in. Yeah. Because, yes, excuse me, I go down this list, and most of these dudes are old, which is fascinating to me. Older catchers, that's who this list is made up of, and then Dylan Cruz. Cruz is starting to show that he's breaking out of this. The biggest sign was obviously he hit two home runs yesterday and a double. Three for five, two home runs and a double, that's a good day. That said, the thing that stands out to me is over the last week. Yeah, last week. Actually, a little more than that because he had some days off in there. So it's over the last like 10 days. It's only six games. Over the last 10 days, strikeout rate, which is up on the season, strikeout rate over the last 10 days is 8.3%. He's at a 4.2% yep. walk rate over the last 10 days. That walk rate is low. He should be a guy who's walking more like 8% of the time. But for a guy who, you know, he struck out 19.7% of the time last year, he's been in sort of the low 20s through most of his minor league career. He's up at 27.7% on the season. That last 10 days of bringing that number down is that's a really, really good sign. That to me is more of a positive long-term sign than even the two home run game is, right? A two home run game is a thing that happened. That's great. He's getting his plate discipline back in shape. Barrel rate looks good. Exit velocity looks good. I think if you have an opportunity, Cruz is like, he's 23 years old. I think there are going to be growing pains. Like, he wasn't great last year either. I don't think the fact that he's showing signs right now that the XWOBA is so good and blah, 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 like that doesn't mean that like you pick him up and tomorrow he's going to win a league for you. And so I think in a redraft format, like I would be selling him if I had him and I could sell him. And I don't think I'd be buying him in redraft because I just think there's a reasonable chance he doesn't help you much this year. In keeper leagues, I'm buying because I think this is sort of maybe the last opportunity to buy in on a guy who could be a difference maker long term.
Yeah, I think I agree with that because in redraft, like, it's funny how the beginning of the season works, because before this recent hot stretch, like, it was looking like his ADP was an amazing disaster, that he should have been a past 250 player. You take a swing on for some upside, not someone you rely on as one of your top three outfielders, which is basically what he was being drafted as. And then over the last week, he has at least recouped almost all of that, right? Because he's now, okay, yep, here he is. He's figured out that disastrous strikeout start. It wasn't just a bad start. He was striking out like every at bat. It was really hard to watch. But now he's like back to where we thought he would be. So I'm not going to pay for that, so to speak. But in a keeper league, yeah, I'm still really excited about Dylan Cruz. From a prospect pedigree point of view, from an athleticism point of view, like, all the tools are there. It's encouraging that, you know, he did get off to that terrible start, and yet he's already breaking out of it, right? We've seen young guys, even veteran players before, get off to starts that are so slow and they just can't break out of it. It's not even, we're recording on April 20th and it looks like, okay, yep, I fixed what's wrong. Like, let's go here. So long-term leagues, yes, I'm still on Dylan Cruz, but given where his value has probably already jumped back up to just over this tiny sample size, I'm with you. I'm not going to buy and redraft.
Yeah. Next guy on this list is a guy we've talked about on the show before. We mentioned him as a, you know, if he is healthy and plays a full season, could he be the leading home run hitter at second base? That's Brandon Lau. Mm. He does have three home runs, so he is on pace for that, you know, 20-ish home runs. But, you know, that's the same three home runs that Pete Crow Armstrong has. So, like, it's maybe a little context there. He's got sort of a weird line. He's always been a high walk guy. It's down to 3.9% this year. It was down to 7.8% last year after being over 10% for basically almost every year of his career. And so there's a little bit of concern there from me that what we're seeing is a legitimate decline in walk rate. And this is a case where, you know, I mentioned before this idea of like zone percentage is a leading indicator. His zone percentage has been creeping up year over year, which suggests that the scouting report on him is turning more and more into like a challenge this guy. Yeah, we know he can get into some power once in a while, but challenge him, see what he can do. And that may really impact the walk rate. And his contact rates, both in and out of the zone, are way down. He was over 81% for zone contact last year, 79.3% for his career, 73.7% this year. That would be almost 3 percentage points lower than any other year of his career. Outside the zone, he's at 40%. He's been at 48.9% for his year. The only year of his career he is below, like his low on his career was basically 43%, unless you count his rookie year. He had 148 plate appearances at 39.2% as a rookie. There are like, those are concerning signs to me with Brandon Lowe. But the exit velocity is like the Statcast data. Like, there's a reason the XWOB is what it is. I am starting to have a little bit of anxiety about Brandon Lowe.
Yeah, so I agree with you. I think if you still need power, like I'm targeting Brandon Lowe because I think he's going to hit for decent pop, right? You mentioned he's got just as many home runs as PCA, which should definitely be a stressful statement. But I'm going to go ahead and project Brandon Lowe for more homers than PCA rest of season. And don't forget the park switch, right? So there's reasons to feel okay. He does have a long track record. I think the reason why it's hard to really get like excited and like think like, no, he's going to turn this around is because most people probably don't need him. If you drafted a top second baseman, first of all, in your league, like an Ozzie Albies, a Jose Altuve, a guy like that, like you're, unless you drafted Marcus Semien, like you're not really disappointed right now. So you're not looking to make a switch, you know, Jazz Chisholm, that type. And then there's been so many like emergent stolen base and or just complete package guys so far this season, where like, if you're in a 12 teamer, Brandon Lowe is like a pretty easy cut because these guys have been perfectly fine. You're Bryce Terang, Brendan Donovan, Tommy Edman, Kyron Paris, who already looks like he's, you know, coming back down to earth at a meteoric speed. But I the second base is just oddly deep. Like Tyler Fitzgerald, the last week and a half or so, looks like he's picking up where he left off last season, which is really interesting. So I just don't think the need for a fringy second baseman like Brandon Lowe is there, which is why it's really easy to be pessimistic about him.
Yeah, I think the one other thing I'll note, I had meant to look this up before and didn't get around to it. And so while you were chatting, I pulled it up. His average bat speed is... I switched the order here. His average bat speed is down about a mile per hour from where it was the last 2 years. That's not great, but it's not, you know, the end of the world. His fast swing rate, right? So the percentage of his swings over 75 miles per hour. And you can think of this, if you're looking at a, looking at it in the context of like hard hit rate, right? So like if bat speed and exit velocity are equivalent, you know, concepts, then fast swing rate is like hard hit rate, how often you get into your fastest swings. His fast swing rate was 36% in 2024. It was 30.5% in 2023, for what it's worth. It's 19.3% this year. Now, we are too early in the bat speed era to really have a good sense of like, is however many swings he's had, which I don't even know, 135 competitive swings. Is that enough to make a judgment on, you know, fast swing rate is down and that's a concern? I don't know, but it's enough to get me, you know, further that anxiety I'm having. And so, yeah, I'm not feeling great about Brandon Lowe, despite the fact that the XWOBA looks good. I just think there's enough signs here that things may be headed the wrong direction. And that's, yeah. So that I'm actually going to ask you, the guy we talked about earlier in the episode that we both sort of liked and are intrigued by, if Luke Keyshaw's available, would you rather have him than Lowe?
Huh. Is Keyshaw second base eligible?
I thought so, but I can double check that.
Yeah, he is. He's only second base on ESPN, so I don't know where that question came from. I think I I think I would take the swing on Keyshaw over Lau just because kind of like what I said, it feels like there's a safety net of available free agents in your 12 teamers where like you should be able to find somebody that'll bridge that gap. Brandon Lau could end up having the season that like we kind of hoped he would and you know, hit 25 homers with 80 RBI, but like I don't think that's the type of thing that if you miss out on it, it's the end of the world. And since most of our listeners do play in longer term leagues, like, yeah, I'd be okay going with Keyshaw over Lau. And if I regret it, I regret it. I don't think it's going to be the difference between a championship and not, but it could be in the other way where if Keyshaw really breaks out, you know, you could be looking at not only a championship, but a keeper for years to come.
Yeah. And I think that's a big thing for me with Keyshaw versus Lau is, you know, which one of them is going to have a better year this year? I would still probably bet on Lau ending up with the better numbers by the end of this year, but the upside long term for Keyshaw, and this is an interesting case of redraft versus keeper being a big factor here, because I don't think Keyshaw has world beating upside. Like, I don't think he's a guy who's going to start becoming a, like, you know, top five draft pick at second base kind of thing. But he could settle in as a low cost guy that you keep and start at second base or middle infield for years. And that has a lot of value. And so I'm probably in redraft less inclined to take that risk because I just don't think the upside is that enticing, but in keeper leagues, I want it. I want that because I think there is a real long-term value in Keyshaw. We only got a couple minutes left, but I want to go through a few more names. So I'm going to read off the rest of the top 10. We only went through three, so I'm going to read off seven names quickly. And we'll see if there's anyone here worth discussing. So number four on this list, the last guy who's got an over 100 point gap between his WOBA and ex-WOBA is Andrew Vaughn. Number five is Mike Trout. Number six, Yordan Alvarez. Number seven, Adley Rutschman. Eight is Yiner Diaz. Nine, Wilson Contreras. 10, Matt Olson. I'll be honest, when I looked at this list, I was really hoping for some interesting names. And I thought the two we just talked the most about, Cruz and Lau, were the most interesting. I look at the rest of this list and it's like, Mike Trout has actually been good. Like, I'm surprised that he has this significant a gap, but it's because he has a 430 ex-WOBA. Yordan Alvarez, I don't think anybody doubts he's going to be fine, even though it's been an ugly start to the year. Similar with Adley Rutschman. Are you, you know, and actually, you know, I want to put Matt Olson in that category, but he had a bit of a down year last year. Are you concerned about Olson, or is there anyone else in that list? Vaughn, Trout, Alvarez, Rutschman, Diaz, Wilson, Contreras, Matt Olson. Is there anyone else on this list that you're concerned about, or anyone else on this list that you're like, yes, go get him?
Well, I'd love to know what's going on with Wilson Contreras. This has just been such a disappointing start. I see that his roster percentage is up a little bit on ESPN, but I don't really understand why, because he has not been good over the last week. He did have a really good series against the Phillies. He went 4-for-8 with a homer and 3 RBI. So maybe that's why, but that was a week ago. He hasn't done anything since. He hasn't even had a multi-hit game. He had a 3-strikeout game the other night. So I don't know what's going on with Wilson Contreras. It's disappointing. He came up briefly earlier when we were talking about Salvador Perez, where he's at first base and he's a good hitter. So yeah. Just hit now. What the heck's going on there? In terms of Matt Olson, though, I know it's now been over a year of just not what we had hoped. I think Braves fans have accepted he is not Freddie Freeman, right? To go all the way back to that.
Yeah.
But I would still buy low on Matt Olson if I could, because I just think the skills are so good. We're going to have Acuna back soon. That is going to be a jolt to that entire lineup. I cannot believe their record. I cannot believe their offensive numbers. I thought for sure, okay, it was bad last year. It's bound to bounce back this year. Acuna must be the catalyst. So I would buy low on Olson, with the idea being, which you should never do this in most cases, but with a player as good as Olson and a player who's like a top three player in baseball coming back, Ronald Acuna Jr., not that he's going to be that when he comes back, but that's how he should be respected. That's enough for me to be like, yeah, I still want this guy. I want him in my lineup.
Yeah, that makes sense. And I think I agree. On Contreras, I'm not, like, part of the issue with Contreras is like, yeah, the, you know, And this is the same case, by the way, with Yiner Diaz. Is like, oh man, the XWOBA is so much better than the WOBA. Their XWOBA is Contreras is 292, Yiner Diaz is 276. Like they're still they even the good underlying numbers relative to their performance are still bad.
But didn't Yiner do this to us last year? Wasn't I like beating the drum that he sucks, and then he like hit like 30 homers or something? Not 30, but you know what I mean.
Yeah, I don't
like. I feel like he might be a streaky player.
He might be, and it makes sense. He's a he's a guy who gets his value by putting the ball in play, and that tends to be a little bit streaky. I'm not giving up on Yiner Diaz. I'm not giving up on Wilson Contreras. I don't know how I feel about buying low on either of those guys. I'd have to dig in a little bit more, and I haven't really had a chance to do that. On Olson, though, I agree with you. I think like we see this happen sometimes where like a guy has a bad year and then gets off to a slow start, but bad year. Olson wasn't terrible last year. But a guy has a down year, gets off to a slow start, and like then once they get going and they go back to being who they were. And like I sort of think that's where we are with Olson. It's just a matter of when it happens. And maybe it won't, but I'm with you. I think he's the guy on this list that I'm most interested in buying low on. I don't believe in Andrew Vaughn, even though he's on this list. He's another guy who he has a 293 XWOBA. Like that's not, there's nothing there given his track record to get excited about. And then Trout, Alvarez, and Rutschman, I think like you can't buy low on those guys. Nobody's like, oh man, Yordan Alvarez off to a bad start. Better sell while I can.
Right. And, Mike Trout, second most homers in baseball. This guy sucks.
Right. So those guys are just, they are what they are, and that's fine. I think, Trout, you're still riding as long as you can and hoping that maybe not playing center field helps him stay healthy. We'll find out. But yeah, I think Olson, other than Cruz, Olson is the most interesting buy low on this list. And Diaz and Contreras, I think are both still somewhere in between. They're certainly not in the Rutschman, Alvarez, Trout group where like, hey, they are what they are and you're not going to be able to buy low anyways. And I don't think either of them are in the Lau group where I'm like, I still don't know that I want to buy low. I think I would happily buy low on Diaz or Contreras if I needed catcher help.
So I'm going to throw you a question to kind of cap things off here. I assume the answer is yes, you would make the switch, but would you switch out? Would you drop Austin Wells to pick up Wilson Contreras?
Would I drop
Austin Wells? Yeah, would you drop? He's hitting under 200 himself, but he is in the Yankees lineup. He already has 3 homers this year. I kind of like Austin Wells, and Contreras just isn't doing anything.
Yeah, I mean, I'm a big fan of Wells, and so I hate the idea of that drop. So in an auto new league, I kind of want both of them, right? Like I want to drop someone else and pick up Contreras and have both those guys. If it's a shallow enough league where I can only really carry one of them, then it's also probably a shallow enough league where I'm not as concerned about the keeper value on Wells. And so I probably would go take Contreras. I think let's be honest, like Contreras is going to be the better player this year. I guess it's possible probably. He won't, but like, I like Wells, but I still don't think that Contreras will be better this year. And I think that the gap between Contreras and Wells will be big enough that the fact that Contreras won't be a catcher in the future, like I don't care. But ideally, yeah. If I'm in a league where you either carry two catchers or three catchers, or you use two catchers, like I'd love to have both those guys. So with that we're gonna call it. It's been over an hour, and it's Easter Sunday. Both of us got to get back to our family. So happy Easter, Pete.
Happy Easter.
Thanks for making the time this morning, listeners. Thanks for listening. We'll be back with you next week.